Hey, Beavis.
What?
Let's go fishing.
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, Auburn stands today at 7-1. Let us just sit back for a second and contemplate that fact, okay? A team that we expected to be probably 4-4, 5-3 maybe at this juncture with some tough games still to go, is 7-1, and we are one monsoon in Louisiana possibly away from being 8-0 right now. Just think if we had played Kentucky that week instead of
sure.
LSU.
Sure.
And four major, at least major opponents, whether they're having good years or not, four major opponents in the SEC still to come. So how do you feel right now as an Auburn person thinking about that?
I feel ecstatic, honestly. I mean, we're 7-1 after the year we had last year. I feel like I look at the rankings and stuff. I don't get worked up about that for this team. I mean, I feel like this is a good team. They're going to play well every week and play hard, but I'm not getting stressed about rankings or the BCS or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm just enjoying the ride at this point. Everything this year, after last year's awfulness, everything this year, this team is just gravy. And just enjoy the ride.
It almost seems like too much gravy to me. I mean, not to poo-poo our glorious happenings, but I almost feel a little selfish. I feel like we were supposed to have a sort of a, 1999 after 98 year, or a 1981 Pat Dye after Barfield year. You're not really supposed to go from Barfield to 1983. You're not really supposed to go from the end of Terry Bowden to middle of Tommy Tuberville, or you know what I'm saying? In the past, we've always had that transition year where the record wasn't great, but you could see the building going on. And this year, it seems like the building is just going on moment by moment.
Maybe it's more like a 1993 situation.
There you go. Yeah, there was talent on that team,
and
they just needed some fresh fresh leadership and a different perspective, and maybe that's exactly right. I hadn't thought about that, so yeah. Well, let me ask you this before we get into the meat of our programming. Since I mentioned the loss to LSU, this just occurred to me. In 1988, Auburn's one loss in the regular season was at LSU, the famous or infamous earthquake game. And later on, when reporters interviewed the players toward like the end of that season or after that season, you and I would have thought they would have said, oh, we hated the LSU game, it ruined everything, blah, blah, blah. That's how you and I thought about it pretty much. Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear what the players said, though?
No.
The two or three players that I heard interviewed about it said, we needed that LSU game because it lit a fire under us, and we wouldn't have done what we did the rest of that season if we hadn't had what happened to us happen in LSU. And I thought that was a very interesting perspective from a player as opposed to a fan who kind of sits back and looks at the bigger picture. So,
sure.
So let me ask you this. Did this team need the loss at LSU, or is it an entirely net negative, or is there anything positive to it? How do you see that?
It's hard. In college football, it's hard to say you ever need a loss.
Right.
I think this team had bought into the coaches and was listening to them already. I think it showed them, where they needed to get better. Mm-hmm. And I think it showed the coaches, like, some of who was ready to play against big-time SEC teams and who wasn't. You notice there was some shuffling of the playing rotation the week after that.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of showed them what they needed to work on, I think. So in that sense, it was really – it was good because it was a measuring stick kind of thing.
Well, and remember, we had the week off and then played Ole Miss, right?
That's right.
I think that when we look back on this season, we're going to say that that week off after LSU and before Ole Miss was the pivotal moment as far as the team going from, you know, gosh, can we compete to actually going out and winning, you know, really taking care of business the way they've been the last few weeks. So, yeah, it may not have been the LSU loss, but certainly I think that that whole chain of events, including the week off right after it, where they self-evaluated. So, all right, well, that's sort of our preliminary matters. I guess I'll just go ahead and do our usual announcements. I guess really all we have is that, you know, we as we always let you know, the podcasts are available every week in a variety of places. So if you're only hearing us in one place, but it's not that convenient and you'd like another option, you have, because I have a slight announcement, it's sort of a minor announcement on that score. You have iTunes, you have the WarEagleReader.com site posted every week. You have the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, which streams it. I heard our show about three times later in the week. Now, the first day after it went up, I wasn't hearing it in the rotation, and I actually emailed the folks there, the good people that run the network, and they said, oh, well, we'll check on that and see. And they twisted a dial somewhere or pushed a button somewhere, and suddenly it was all I was hearing. So I appreciate them kind of going out of their way to make sure that our show was heard this week, especially since it was the one that we, you know, had a lot of stuff going on and put a lot of post-production into. So that meant a lot. But also, it was, I had said a few things on Twitter about our bandwidth and everything. I want to address that right quick, if you will bear with me. What had happened was we have a set amount of bandwidth available for people to listen to our show just from the Podbean site, which goes to the War Eagle Reader and to iTunes. And what had happened was that our last couple of episodes, which we're very humble about and grateful, but our last couple of episodes had really kind of blown up. And I totally credit the Auburn football team. It's not us. I mean, I'm glad people like hearing us talk about it, but it's the Auburn football team's success that drives this bus. You'll pardon the expression. And so we were at 98.5% of our capacity last week, and so I went ahead and bit the bullet and upped our plan, upped our storage and our bandwidth capacity. So there shouldn't be any problem now at all with getting our show in any location. We should be readily available. We're no longer about to be shut down. We're rolling along just fine. So I just want to make sure that people hadn't thought we were in trouble or going to go off the air or something. We are perfectly fine. So. John, we get a lot of listener questions, but this week sort of sets the high water mark, doesn't it?
It does. We love getting questions from listeners. We had a lot of good ones this week and a lot of fun ones. So, all right, I'm going to read them out and you're going to answer. You ready?
And then I'll throw it back to you probably.
All right. Our first question comes from Fearless and True. He says, aside from the impact made by Cam Newton and Michael Dyer 2010, are this year's newcomers – the most productive we've ever had as a group?
Well, and Michael Scott Nicky, the author of of the Auburn's Unclaimed National Championship, which is an awesome, awesome book, he replied and reminded us, and I always think about this, that Rudy Johnson by himself was sort of a one-man turning-around crew in 2000, got us to the championship game. That's absolutely true. There's no doubt about it. He was the missing piece. Because we had a good passing game, more or less, in 99, but no running game. So that is true. But as far as a unit coming in, I guess I would really have to think back and go over some of the recruiting classes, because it doesn't seem like, for example, the 93 team had a lot of really high-impact newcomers. That team was seniors that really got it together. That was Stan White.
Mm-hmm.
And Steven,
Frank Sanders,
James Bostic, and Steven Davis, and all of them, yeah. And that defensive backfield that was so good in 93 and 94. The 2004 team was the 2001 freshman.
Mm-hmm. 2001, 2002 classes.
Yes.
It was a lot of really good players in those classes, some of which made a difference on those teams.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The receivers and Jason and Cadillac and Ronnie all came in about the same time, or were redshirted and came in about the same time. So, yeah. So I don't know. Can you think of a group that's had as impact as much as Nick Marshall, Cameron Artis Payne, basically half the team except for Trey Mason, right?
Sure. Montrevious Adams, Carl Lawson, Elijah Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of guys making a difference there.
It really is, yeah. We may think of somebody later, but yeah, for right now, I'll say, yeah, this really is the really amazing group.
It may be. I mean, 2002 kind of leaps to mind, as there was a lot of good players that came in that year.
Yeah.
So that'd be the only other group that comes to my mind right away. But clearly, obviously, the 2010 is the other example, not just Dyer and Cam. There was a couple other new players that came in that year and helped make a difference too. All right. Next question from Charles Crane. He says, does the Sugar Bowl take a – say there's a 10-2 Auburn team with a loss to LSU and Alabama. Would the Sugar Bowl take that 10-2 Auburn team over a 10-2 A&M team, a 10-2 Missouri team, or a 10-3 South Carolina team?
Well, they're not going to take a 10-3 team if there's a 10-2 team. The 10-3 team will go to the Outback Bowl or the Capital One Bowl. Yeah, we really could have quite a logjam, couldn't we? And I think there would be some temptation to take Missouri just because they're kind of the newcomer. But a lot of factors go into it. I mean, are they still impacted by, like, your ranking at the end of the year in the BCS?
Some of that. I mean, there's a certain criteria where if you're at the top of the BCS, think of the top eight, maybe they have to take you.
Yeah.
But they can still only take two per conference, so they still take the two. But, I mean, I think the Sugar Bowl, you know, say Auburn and Texas A&M in this example were both in the top, and Missouri were all in the top eight, and Alabama, you know, has already taken one of the bowl slots. The other one goes to those three teams. It doesn't necessarily go to the highest ranked team, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, over the years there have been different criteria. For a while, it was whoever hadn't been the longest.
Yeah, that's gone. Now it's specifically about BCS rankings, but the bowl also gets some choice.
They get some choice too, right?
And it says if the bowl gets to pick, if the Sugar Bowl committee gets to pick, they're going to pick Texas A&M.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One, Manziel and those guys, entertaining, be good TV ratings, and that's what they care about. And number two, there's a lot of Texas A&M fans, and they haven't been in New Orleans, and they would sell a ton of tickets and hotel rooms and stuff.
But I think A&M may lose another game.
It's very possible. A&M Missouri play each other. I mean, in this example, I think Charles has A&M beating Missouri, but it's not over. And then A&M, this assumes A&M would beat LSU. So
right. So
it's an interesting question. We're going to come back to the bowl scenarios in a minute.
Yeah. All right. What else?
All right. Next question from James Jones, a frequent question asker, and he says, "How do you feel about Auburn having a system where the fastest receiver on the team gets to wear number 18? LSU has a thing where they give out number 18 to one of the team leaders." And he says, just think about it. I mean, Alexander Wright, Thomas Bailey, Robert Baker, Sammy Coates. You know, it could be a thing where 18 has been traditionally one of our most productive receivers. It's crazy.
I guess Cody wasn't the fastest player, though.
No.
He had 18, right? So, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, because 18 is really more of a quarterback number, kind of. It's right up there on the edge. And yet we've had a lot of receivers wear that number.
Mm-hmm. A lot of good receivers.
I mean, Cody is the only quarterback I can think of that's ever worn 18 for Auburn in the modern era, at least. Whereas, yeah, a lot of receivers. So, yeah, that's interesting. It's kind of like in soccer where number 10 goes to the star, the scorer guy, you know. So, the only numbers we can't use are 7 and 88 and 34, right? So, you think that how long until they...
78.
No, 88 is... 88 is
Rocker?
No, so Beasley.
Beasley, okay, that's right.
Yeah, Beasley, 88. How long until we retire number two?
Not right away.
They waited 10 years. No, not 10. Let's say 85. They waited 7 years to retire 34.
Yeah. You have to be careful with the number retiring. You turn around, you're out of numbers. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what Florida did? They'll have like the former players vote or something to give it back or something. So I don't know. There's different ways around it, but you got to think they've got to retire too if they retired. See, when they retired Beasley, I know I'm testing your patience, but let me finish this thought. I know when they retired Beasley, and it's well deserved, but just think about it. When you retired Terry Beasley's jersey, what you did was say, if you retire his, you have to retire blank. Because he didn't win the Heisman, he didn't do whatever else. He was the receiver for Sullivan. And so when you said, we'll retire this guy, it basically means anybody better than him, historically, right, needs to have his retired too. And so to me, that meant you had to retire Bo, and you have to retire Cam. That's how I see it, anyway.
That's fair. All right, we got more questions.
Let's go. We have lots.
All right, next question is from Die Down the Field.
Everybody's Halloweening this week, fine.
Fly down the field.
Yes.
Lots of Halloween names this week. Got to sort those out. All right, so his question is, what is the record at Auburn for the number of players taking snaps in a non-kicking situation?
Oh, in other words, we did have a lot of people out lined up at the quarterback position.
At least five.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We had Nick Marshall, Jeremy Johnson, Kyle Frazier, Jonathan Wallace, and Cameron Artis Payne.
Did anybody else take a snap?
That's five right there. That's all. Did they sneak Tuberville out there in a disguise to take a couple?
But I thought at the end of the game there might have been a direct snap to one of the other running backs, maybe.
It may have been. That would be six if we did. So,
but that's got to be, if not the record, that's got to be close. Because I mean, you think about it. Other years, it was one guy.
Well, look,
I mean, maybe two, but never more than two.
Look, Pat Dye and Tommy Tuberville, neither one of them were ever going to do that.
No.
So it would have to be either under Chizik, Terry, or now. And I don't remember it under either one of them, so it has to be this.
I think it might be.
Yeah, that's crazy.
All right. Emily Rios asks, if Marshall can't start, how different – all right, easy. How different is the offense with Jeremy Johnson?
Pretty dang different.
And she says, is she the only one worried about the Arkansas curse?
And, of course, you and I both immediately say, no.
You're not the only one. Weird things happen up there.
Yes, it's called the Hog Hicks.
But it's a good question. We'll talk about Marshall in a minute, but how would the offense be different if Jeremy Johnson was a starting quarterback?
More passing, less read option.
Mm-hmm.
You play to his strength.
Mm-hmm. And maybe less read option where you run the read option, but he hands it off more. He just keeps it less. I mean, he keeps it enough to keep the defense honest. It makes him pay for it, but you're not going to get the big chunks of yards that you've been getting out of Marshall the last 2 weeks with that.
It would look more like 2011. Not exactly like 2011, because Jeremy Johnson is not Barrett Trotter. With all due respect to both those fine gentlemen, Jeremy probably can run a little better. Barrett wasn't a bad runner, but, you know, I mean, let's be honest.
No. But this is one of these things about the Malzahn offense is over the years as he's run this offense, sometimes he's had quarterbacks who were good runners.
Mm-hmm.
And the offense has still been incredibly productive.
Mm-hmm.
They phase some of that stuff out and they put in more short, accurate passes. And the offense can still – he's got plenty of that stuff in his pocket waiting for the right scenario to use it, and they can still tear defenses up with it. So.
Mm-hmm. And one thing this coaching staff has been able to do is put together a game plan. You know, so they'll figure out what will work and they'll have a plan ready if that were the case. Because they'll know, right? I mean, you know that they'll know a couple of days early whether or not they're going to use Marshall. And if they know that they can't, they will have a plan in place that will probably be very effective and put us in a position to win the game.
That's right. Yeah. All right, our next question is from Chris, and he asked, can you imagine a scenario where we lose this week? I don't think I can, says feels weird to say that.
Yes.
You and I can imagine that scenario. We'll come back to this question, because when we talk about the Arkansas game, we'll talk about our bad scenarios.
Okay, very good.
All right, the Tiger Talk says, is it possible Auburn runs over 100 plays this week?
Is there?
We hope so.
Is there a specific reason why we should think so this week? I mean, is it a matchup thing?
No, but just as a way to stick it to Bielema about the hurry-up offense.
Well, yeah, I like to run 110 if we could, but that would be – yeah, I hope that as long as it fits within the game plan and contributes to victory, I hope we run the hurry-up, no huddle as fast as we've run it all year. That would be awesome.
I'm checking season high against them is 89 by South Carolina. 89 plays.
That's pretty good.
So, yeah, if we're in that ballpark, I'll be pretty happy.
Yeah.
It would be funny to run 100, though. All right. Another question from Jonathan Harris, who's at AU Zoom. He says, which pass win over Arkansas do you remember the most? He says, I love the 2004 game with the flea flicker to start the game.
All right, let's look at some history here because I might have to kind of run through these quickly, but they're all pretty vivid. I certainly know the ones I remember the most because I wanted to hide under my seat.
Yeah.
Oh, 99, 01, 02.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's the ones that stand out in my mind, and I'm going to kind of go back to the beginning. Not counting 84, which was a bowl game, and both teams were running the wishbone, sort of, and it was boring, and it was snowy and yucky.
I was there.
You were at the Liberty Bowl?
Our family was at the Liberty Bowl.
That's dedication, friend.
I was going to say this. It was so cold, and Arkansas play Auburn in Memphis in bad weather.
Wow.
It was December. We were hardcore. So
that was our reward in a season where we began the year ranked number one.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. The 93 game stands out in my mind because it's the one where it snowed like a huge snowstorm, and the trainers had to go out and buy everything orange and blue they could find in Fayetteville or Little Rock, wherever they played it, right before the game because they weren't expecting it to be so cold and horrible. And that's the game where they bulldozed the field so you could play on it.
Yeah.
And I believe it was the fullback. Was it Reed McMillan?
That's it.
Because he would always overheat. But in the freezing cold, he did great. So that one stands out. 94 is the year Steven Davis ran all over Danny Ford's Arkansas. There's some
96 was the year it was on the same time as the Braves game, right?
95 was the one when they were winning the World Series. 95 is the one where the Braves were winning the World Series,
right?
And then you flipped over and Hawkins missed the field goal.
Okay. Yeah.
The 2000 one stood out to me because we'd lost so badly to them the previous 2 years. And that's the game where Tuberville beat them, and we took a safety on like the last couple of plays, and the final score was like 20-19 or something like that, and it just scared me to death. But we actually beat them with Rudy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
The next one that stands out, 2005. 2005 is when it wasn't on TV or I didn't get to watch it, and it's the one where we were losing at halftime. And then Brandon Cox came out and threw like screen passes, and Brad Lester had a big game, and we ended up beating him like 34-17.
Mm-hmm.
Huge comeback in the second half. He mentions Jonathan mentions the 04 game that started with the flea flicker.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit that was pretty cool. That was. Al Borges cracking open the playbook and throwing some trick play stuff out there with Jason Campbell. And I want to say Anthony Mix was involved in that play.
I can't remember. Well, but
we did something similar was it in 02 against Alabama? So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, but the clearly the 2007 9-7 victory is not sticking in your mind.
Well, the 2003 is the one where they had just beaten us so badly in 2001 and 2002 with Matt Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And in 03, we shut him down. And that's the one where they actually we beat him like, that was pretty low scoring too in 03. And that's the one where they had two long runs for touchdowns, like 70 or 80 yards. And both were called back for holding. And the Arkansas fans were just ballistic.
Mm.
So yeah, that was but wait, there's one Arkansas game that has to stand out above all the others, and you know which one I'm thinking about now.
You thinking about the Otis Mound story? No.
I'm thinking about the one where Arkansas scored like 43 points and looked up and realized they were losing by 20 something.
Oh, we did about 2010.
Yes, that was one. That was my favorite game of the entire season that year. You know, Alabama's a, that was just a. I've always said I can't count the 2010 Iron Bowl as my favorite game that year because I can't count any game as a favorite where I spend half the game wanting to slit my wrist and dig a hole in the ground. You know, so. Yep. But that Arkansas game was like a one of the old-fashioned Florida State showdowns. You know, that thing was insane. I loved it. So, yeah, that's my favorite. 2010, that was spectacular. And to have Petrino on the losing end was even better.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
All right, he asked the other question, which is, which game worries you more at this point, Arkansas or Tennessee?
Oh, I think we both agree Tennessee, right?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Auburn Elvis asked a question. He says, I'm really impressed by how many new wrinkles Gus adds each week. Is this what good coaching looks like and can continue indefinitely?
Well, we've said it before. Gus is writing a long novel. He's doing an HBO series with continuity between episodes. And so he's just going to keep adding as many wrinkles as he feels like he needs to tell the whole story. The story hopefully being us going to a BCS bowl game.
But a lot of it is he takes the long-term view about – he knows what his offense could do, and he knows all the little things, the wrinkles and things he wants to add. And he sets things up in all these early games so that the Georgias and Alabamas and Tennessees are looking at the game film from those games, and they see certain things. And then we play them. He'll show them that formation. He'll show them that play, and then we'll do something completely different and catch them off guard. And so that's the other thing that I just love about it is – it's this long, drawn-out thing setting up for the payoff, you know, weeks later. And it's also every week it's a little bit something different, a little wrinkle here, a little something there that adds to it, just makes it better. It is good coaching. Mm. It's also he takes advantage of what the players can do.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about with the quarterback thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to have a running quarterback. You could have a guy – you could have, be successful with Chris Todd at quarterback in this offense. And Jeremy Johnson is, you know, down the road to be 10 times the quarterback Chris Todd was. So that's a taking advantage of what your players can do, what they can do well, and utilizing their talents in the best way.
How much of that do you credit also to Lashley?
He deserves the credit. I mean, he's the, you know, he's really calling the plays. He's the one drawing up the game plan every week. I mean, that, you know, Gus is some – portion of the play calling, and he gives Lashley input, but Lashley's the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the one doing the work every week. So some of it is he's overshadowed a little bit by Malzahn, but I think there's going to come a time when he's going to get more and more credit. Mm-hmm. You know, some smaller school is going to try and hire him away.
Yeah. I've said within 4 years, he's going to be coaching at a directional school. Mm-hmm. I really think he's in the same club as, the Texas Tech coach,
Kingsbury,
and a couple of these other sort of offensive gurus that have come up, you know, under really smart mentors. And I mean, and you just look at Lashley, he's young, but he looks like a coach, you know, he just looks like he's got a swagger to him, a confidence to him. I really like him a lot there. The reason I was thinking, cause there was a good article about him. Do you remember where it was? It was floating around this week. There was like, it had an interview and it had basically it talked to Gus a little about it.
It was in USA Today.
Yeah, yeah, and basically Gus said that he called half the plays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So, yeah, if you can dig that up, it was actually well worth a couple of minutes of time.
Another question from Ross Hatcher. I like this one. Who's easier to like, Brett Bielema or Nick Saban?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, with Bielema, it's like oblivious, oblivious, oblivious. Hey, that ticked me off. Whereas with Saban, it's been, you know, just slow-burning hatred for years and years and years. So
yeah.
It's a different kind of dislike, the two, you know. Give Butthead a few more years to really earn the ire. I mean, I know he's got it now. He's said and done a few things that make it easy to get started, you know.
Yeah, but he's got some ways to go to catch Saban.
Uh-huh.
All right, a couple more here. We'll wrap it up.
Okay.
This is from Short Tom. He says, way too early, but do you think Auburn can beat Bama? And if we run the table and beat Bama, who goes to the championship game?
Well, we're not going to surprise them like we did in 2009. That would help. If they came in thinking that we weren't, you know, all that, and we could ambush them like we pretty much did in 2009, where we just basically threw everything but the kitchen sink at them in the first two quarters, you know, and then onside kicks and reverses and just everything. But, I mean, we're a better team than we were in 2009, too.
They have a lot more talent than that team.
Is this Alabama team substantially better than the 2009 Alabama team?
No.
All right.
On defense, they're not as good as the 2009 team.
Can this Auburn team move the ball and score points on this Alabama team?
Yes. So not 30.
Right.
Or, you know, 35, whatever. But they could score points on them, yes.
So it's going to look more like the Mississippi State game?
Yes.
All right. So I think that means we can be in it. I don't know if we can beat them, but I think at that point it just comes down to who plays well that day.
That's right. I mean, I think we can score points on them. I think we can move the ball on them. I think this offense is talented enough to do that and well-coached enough. I think they're tough to stop. I mean, they're an excellent quarterback, excellent receiver, excellent running backs. Their offensive line is the biggest thing where it's not as good as last year. I mean, it's good, but – you know, their offensive line the last 2 years was the best in the country by a lot. And all the, you know, most of those guys are in the NFL. So they, you know, they're good, but they're a long way from being where they were, you know, a year or two ago in offensive line play. So that's where I think Auburn's defensive line can actually, you know, if they have a good game, they could keep us in the game. That's why, you know, the best defensive lines in the SEC are Auburn and South Carolina. And Alabama hasn't played either one of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about Alabama is, and this is, they're so good that, and the way the schedule works out, they haven't played any close games.
Right.
I mean, the only close game they played was A&M. We'll see. They still got to play LSU. But, you know, some of that's a credit to them because they crush everybody. But the other part is, if you, Auburn's been in some close games, they know they can handle themselves. They know what to do when the game's on the line late in the game. And in some sense, Alabama only knows that stuff from practice.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know it because they've been through it multiple times like Auburn has. So that's just something else to lay out there.
So if we run the table and beat Alabama, obviously we would have the tiebreaker on them.
Yep.
So then the only question would be, does LSU – well, LSU's already got two losses. So if we run the table, we go, right?
That's it. It's a done deal.
Yeah.
If we run the table, we go. Now, this is an area where if we lose to Georgia, you know, and LSU wins out and they beat Bama.
Yeah, you start getting in that scenario where it goes in the
circle. Start getting into the tie, you know, we get into a 3 or 4-way tie situation, which I don't even want to think about yet. But,
right.
You know, if we go win out, we beat Alabama, we go. That's done. That's the easy way to think about it. So
I can tell you one thing for sure.
What?
Ole Miss doesn't go. you know, I was hearing that, you know, people were saying that if Missouri went, they would be so miserable because Ole Miss still hadn't been.
I mean, look, I'm going to say this, it's not a done deal that Missouri goes. I mean, they had their shot last week and they blew it. We'll talk about that game in a minute. But
this reminds me, I was looking at this the other day because it's what I do. There's only five teams out of 14 in the SEC, five teams that have won multiple SEC championship games. Alabama, Florida, LSU, Georgia, and Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's – did Tennessee win multiple? It's either Tennessee or
– yes, they've won more than one, yes.
Okay, so then maybe it's not – no, LSU has two, so maybe, yeah, Georgia has two. So, okay, so I guess six then. Six out of 14, and we're, okay, well, anyway.
All right, because I know that, I mean, the T. Martin team won, obviously, and then the Peyton Manning team beat us that 1 year, so.
That's right. So Alabama, Auburn, LSU in the West, and Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia in the East, right? And that's pretty much the top six.
Yep. All right. Thank you again for all the great listener questions this week. If you think of some more during the week or during the game this week, send them to us at AU Wishbone on Twitter, and we'll be happy to answer them. And it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right,
so we're going to move on to talk about Florida Atlantic. Not a whole lot we learned from this game.
No.
About Auburn, I think.
Well, we learned that when Gus wants to come out and jump on somebody, that running game can do it.
That's right. Well, the other thing is learning to deal with victory is a learned skill. It's hard. A lot of college teams you see have the kind of win that Auburn had at Texas A&M, and they come out the next week and lay an egg. Mm-hmm. You know, they play crappy. You see it all the time in college football, and you've seen Auburn do it in the years past. This team was completely focused on Saturday. They came out and took care of business, and I thought that was a great sign. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is this team knows how to take care of business against a lesser team. We've seen a lot of Auburn teams over the last few years. They're against a team they're better than. They should beat them by 20 points, but the other team kind of hangs around.
Yes.
And it's a problem. So that was good to see in this game. The biggest news out of the game, obviously, was Nick Marshall getting hurt, getting banged in the shoulder on that one play, and then getting slammed down hard after that and coming out. All the reports are that he looks like he's going to be fine to play Saturday night, but you never know until it actually happens. I was reading on Twitter a few minutes ago, he's at the basketball game tonight hanging out with the other players. So.
Oh, good.
But, we got a lot more look at Jeremy Johnson, got a look at some other young players. And, what did you think about Jeremy Johnson?
Well, I was going to say, I think that probably Nick Marshall could have played the Western Carolina game if he needed to,
Yeah.
And so I think he's probably about as hurt, maybe not even as hurt as he was then. So, but it does make a good point that Gus was right to get Jeremy Johnson ready when he did, because when you use a quarterback the way we use Nick Marshall, and he's not a big guy, right? He's not like Cam going to run over people and then pop right back up and not show any ill effects until game 14, then clearly it was a good move to go ahead and have somebody else ready to play, if needed. So so clearly Gus did know what he was doing, and all these people that were questioning him, there you go.
Well, but and I questioned it too, but you're right. Some of it is the way the season has gone, mm-hmm. where, Auburn's in a position to do really good things this year. And it the way Marshall runs and the hits he takes, it's very possible it's going to happen in one of the SEC games. And we're on the road at Tennessee, for example, mm-hmm. and Marshall takes a big hit right before halftime and goes out. I don't want to be in the second half, starting Jonathan Wallace at Tennessee, with the chance to go to the SEC championship game on the line. I don't want that. I'd feel 1,000 times better with Jeremy Johnson in the game.
I think it also says a lot about how much Gus and Lashley, what they think about the two quarterbacks we had in the spring, because clearly they wanted to get to play some, but if the game is on the line in a big conference game, they want Nick Marshall or Jeremy Johnson.
That's right.
Yeah. So for better or worse. Yeah. So Jeremy, he's got a really nice touch, man. He can deliver a football. He hit Coates twice, right, for good mm-hmm. long passes. What do you think about his passing compared to Nick Marshall?
He throws a beautiful long pass, Jeremy Johnson does. And you can see, I think he's more accurate. He has more touch. Mm-hmm. Because he's taller, he can see the field a little bit better, I think. And that helps him, think about that. But he's 4 or 5 inches taller than Marshall is. I think that really helps him when he's passing the ball. But a lot of it is just his body and the way he throws it. It's very accurate, very catchable ball. And so I think it's very impressive, and especially the on the long throws, he made it really, really lays it out there nicely for the receiver.
All right, here's a question for you, because we've talked about how Gus sets things up weeks in advance, right? I feel like Gus and Lashley have sort of started thinking that, Marshall can throw the ball 50 miles, but he kind of chucks it like out of a catapult rather than pinpoint dropping it in there,
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that we've been seeing Jeremy Johnson come in and hand off, or Johnson come in and do a little short pass? Is there going to come a play in one of these big four games to finish where Johnson comes out, fakes a little handoff, and does a 50-yard bomb to Coates?
Sure. That play's coming. I think you got to have Johnson come in and get some experience and hand the ball off, because he's known as the passer. And he's got to come in some and keep it, honestly, is the other thing, because I don't think the defense is going to expect that. But he's got to come in and hand the ball off some, keep him honest. But I think that they're going to use him to throw deep. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw the first play came in the game this week. Mm-hmm. He was chucking it. So, I think I fully expect to see that against some of these big SEC teams.
Well, what else we got on this game? There's not a whole – I was going to say, yeah. We ran the ball, like, the whole first quarter, basically, mm-hmm. if not more.
No passing at all.
Yeah, I mean, what did you make of that? Because I expected the exact opposite.
You thought we needed to work on the passing game, so we would?
I thought it was going to be another one of those Western Carolina or another one of those Cam versus, whatever directional school halfway through the season in 2010, where it's all passing, don't get Nick hurt, because we already know we can do that.
Mm-hmm. I think some of it was that Gus and them wanted to come out and just kind of lay the boot down on them early and take control of the game. Don't let them even think about hanging around.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that with this team is just run the ball. Execute the offense. Cameron Artis Payne had a lot of carries. In this game, I thought he looked the best he's looked all season.
Yeah.
I thought he looked much more explosive in the hole than he has other times.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it was just, this is what this offense does. It's the bread and butter. And they didn't want to come out there early in the game and have a couple of three and outs and let the other team, think they're in the game. They wanted to come out and lay this down on them, get a bunch of yards, get a bunch of points, take complete control, and then they could start working on the other stuff.
Gus did not treat this like a Western Carolina game. He acted from day one like this was a game we actually could lose if things kind of went wrong. Like, he kept saying that their starters on defense were as good as about anybody, And so we needed to come out and really, like you say, just kind of lay it to them early, and then you can kind of let up a little bit. Did you realize we only scored, 7 points in the second half?
Mm-hmm.
He really took his foot off the, not the necessarily the speed pedal, but the the going for the end zone.
Well, that and playing a bunch of young guys. I mean, playing all the backups. So
yeah, we even got Shakespeare in the game again. So it's always fun when the Bard of the Plains gets to come out and close. He's like the closer now in these games. He gets to come out the bottom of the ninth when the score is out of hand and just run the ball till the clock runs out. He's the clock killer. That's what I'm gonna start calling Shakespeare, the clock killer.
Oh, my gosh. All right, let's move on to talk about Arkansas.
Hey, Davis.
All right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
For those who are not familiar with the Hog Hex and why we're worried about it, give us a little background on why we should worry about that.
Watch those flashbacks, dude.
Oh, dear Lord in heaven, the Hog Hex. Well, it's kind of like what we have on Georgia. But maybe even worse, there's the hex Auburn has on Georgia, which is that whenever Georgia's having a good year, Auburn occasionally tends to rise up and kind of ruin things for them. It's happened not as much lately, obviously, but there have been times going all the way back into the 70s, right? Probably even before that, that I don't even know about. And similarly, there have been so many times. I mean, there have been so many times that we lost to Arkansas, but still had a really good season. And we would win the West and go to the champ, and we would win the West, and we would go to Atlanta, except that Arkansas would play Kentucky and Vanderbilt back then, and we would be playing Georgia and Florida or Tennessee, yeah. And we would lose one of those, and it would be a tiebreaker situation, and Arkansas, like the two or three times Arkansas went to the SEC championship game. At least two and maybe all three times that Arkansas has been, I think it's been three maybe,
mm-hmm.
they took the tiebreaker off of us.
You can't be serious, man.
Mm-hmm.
There was the missed kick in 95. There was the one play against Georgia, Auburn, Georgia in 2002 on that last play that changed mm-hmm. both participants. To my knowledge, still the only time in 20 years of SEC championship games that both participants in Atlanta changed on one play in one game, because it would have been Auburn versus Florida, and it became yep. Georgia versus Arkansas.
Yep.
And then there was 2006, where we had a great season. We were 11-2, but we lost the game at home to Arkansas, whose offensive coordinator was?
Gus Malzahn.
Yep.
You cannot be serious!
There you go.
Well, this team, this Arkansas team, they did have an off week, but they have lost five games in a row. They started out the year winning three, you know, non-conference games against bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Southern Miss, Samford, those kind of teams. And since then, you know, then they lost to Rutgers, and they've lost five games in a row. And the last two games, you know, they were ahead of South Carolina 7-0, whatever, and then got annihilated, and Alabama just destroyed them last week.
There were at least two games in there that they started 7-0 and ended up losing like 50-7.
Mm-hmm. They're having a rough season, so this Arkansas team, you know, not one of the better teams. They hung with A&M for a while, but it still didn't go well for them. Looking at them as a team, they've lost all those good receivers they've had since 2010 are gone, the guys that torched us over the years.
Mm-hmm.
They have two really good running backs, Alex Collins and Jonathan Williams. Alex Collins is a freshman who's an excellent running back, a tough inside guy. That's going to be a good challenge for Auburn's defense. But in terms of their defense, they have two really good defensive ends, two guys that can – you know, hold the edge and get pressure on quarterbacks and stuff. But other than that, they're not good on defense. I mean, they're now, in terms of conference games, they're the worst rushing defense in the SEC.
And when you said that in our show notes, I inserted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 exclamation points. Because the main reason, other than a great defensive showing, so to speak, that we beat Texas A&M was that their run defense was so suspect. And now you're telling me that Arkansas has the worst rushing defense?
Arkansas has dropped below Texas A&M after we laid the, you know, 300 yards or whatever at Texas A&M. Arkansas has dropped below them, and they're the worst rushing defense in SEC play.
So they have a worse rushing defense than A&M after what we did to A&M.
That's right.
Wow. Wow, man. All right. Here's my comparison. Think about this. Butthead and Arkansas. I can't pronounce the other name, and so he's Butthead. He looks like Butthead. Butthead and Arkansas are this year what it would have looked like if Chizik was just starting out last year with Leffler in their first year. Because they would have been given more rope. They wouldn't have been ejected immediately. Well, I don't know, 3-9, maybe they would have. They may have pulled a Jack Crow. Gone ahead and shown them the door halfway through the season or earlier. Actually, the first game with Jack Crow. But do you see what I'm saying is you're taking a team that was assembled to play one kind of football, and you're bringing in a coach and a staff that want to run a completely different kind. And Arkansas is having the same kind of results this year that we had last year doing that. The only difference is it wasn't Chizik's first year, and so we were done. This is Butthead's first year, so they're going to give him more time.
That's true. I mean, I think in the big picture with Arkansas, you know, they were pretty good the last couple of years, but that quarterback kept him in the game.
Yeah.
The guy who came in 2010 in relief. I'll think of it in a minute. But he kept him in the game the last couple of years. But he's going to the NFL now. I mean, or actually, he didn't make it their NFL team. And Tyler Wilson, that's the guy's name. But he's gone. All those good receivers are gone. A lot of their good defensive players are gone. A lot of the offensive linemen are gone. So I think some of it is a talent drain. And then you had a situation where last year they had an interim coach all year.
Ugh.
So I think that whole interim coach thing and Petrino getting fired kind of hurt the recruiting 2 years in a row, basically. And it's only now that they're able to get the new staff in there, recruit. So I think there's a bit of a talent gap there a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like you're saying, also there's a transition to a new system. They don't exactly have the players to fit it. And I think the other part is simple. I mean, the SEC West is just brutal.
Yeah.
It's the toughest division in college football, and it's not a place that's easy to rebuild from the bottom up. And I think they're clearly down there at the bottom of the division right now.
Yeah. And how long do you think before they're competitive again?
I mean, I thought they'd be better than this. I thought they'd be kind of scrappy, playing hard more in the way that Tennessee is
right
this year.
Yeah.
And I still think maybe they have the potential to do that. But I think they're 2 years away from being competitive. I don't think one recruiting class and a spring practice is going to turn this thing around.
Yeah. Even though it did for us, because we were going back to what we were.
Right. But it was a different situation. I mean, again, I think this Auburn team, you know, coming in has a lot more talent on it than Arkansas does.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the two coaching staff started at the same time, but I just think Auburn has more talent.
Absolutely. Same with Tennessee, right? Versus Auburn.
Yeah. I think Auburn has more talent than Tennessee did. I think Tennessee has more talent on it than Arkansas has. Mm-hmm. So.
What about Brandon Allen?
He's bad. I mean, he's their quarterback this year, but he's not nearly as good as Tyler Wilson, and I think some of it is the receivers aren't as good as Kobe Hamilton and those guys they had there the last couple of years. So he's had a bad year. I mean, he's been injured some off and on, but, you know, it hasn't really worked out for him this year. And especially in SEC play, I mean, overall his stats don't look terrible. But when you look at, Arkansas quarterbacks in SEC play, this is what it looks like: 38% completion percentage, 77 QB rating, 3 touchdowns, and 9 interceptions.
Good gosh, am I really supposed to? I was trying to take this game seriously, very seriously. But the more
I've given you all these stats about how bad they are, but at the same time, funky stuff happens up there. Weird stuff happens, and good Auburn teams can go up there and play crappy. You never know. Like, some freak weather thing happens, you know, ice storm or something. And, we've played in some tough road games. We played at A&M. We played at Baton Rouge. I think that helps prepare us. But, you know.
Those people start making their pig noises, and anything can happen.
Well, and again, the biggest problem Auburn had all season was really LSU running it straight at us at the beginning of that game. And some of that was the rainstorm. Some of that was the defense not, doing their job. And they admitted later they were trying some new alignments and stuff. So, I mean, that's what Arkansas is going to do. They're kind of the opposite of a lot of the teams we play this year. They'll want to spread it out and move the ball around, chuck the ball over the place. They're going to line it up and come at us with these running backs. And the Auburn defense is going to have to be tough in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a challenge.
You want
some more numbers so that you're not worried so much?
Well, I'm going to be worried anyway because of the hex, the hog hex. But go ahead.
They're terrible on special teams.
Love it.
Punt coverage and kickoff coverage is both crappy. They're both bad at those things. And in SEC play, they are last in turnover margin.
Good Lord.
So against SEC teams, they played 5 conference games. They've created 1 turnover and given it away 10 times.
Yeah, and the last 2 conference games they've played, they're like lost by a combined score of like 100-7, right?
Yes.
Good gosh.
So, I mean, really, they had an off week to get it together, but Auburn is kind of catching them at a good time. And if Auburn can jump on them with both feet, the bottom may drop out from under them. Man. Based on how they've responded in these other games. So.
I want a point prediction. I want a score prediction from you now.
I think Auburn's going to win, and Arkansas will hang around for a while and make it close, and then Auburn pulls away and wins. I'm going to say 27-14.
I was going to say 27 as well, so I'm going to say 27-13.
Okay.
There we go. Yeah. And watch us. I say that. There's another part of me that says the score is going to be 40-something. I'm not saying who has the 40. I mean, it's one of those weird.
Well, they're not scoring 40 on us.
So all right. That gets us to a thing I wanted to add here, which I think you're cool with, which is a quick look at our bowl options. Now, the last thing I want to do is jinx us, particularly right after we've talked about the hog hex, okay? But it has been talked about a little bit, so let's just take a sort of a realistic, you and I are very conservative about these things. We're not going to be all crazy. Of course, that's gotten us into trouble this year, right? But let's just take a sort of a conservative, careful look at the at what our bowl options are.
Again, taking a conservative kind of middle of the road approach to what Auburn's final record would be, what we're really looking at is, you know, Cotton Bowl, Capital One, Outback, I think are the three most likely. And there are scenarios where, you know, even if Auburn doesn't beat Alabama, they could be the second highest ranked SEC team. They could go to the Sugar Bowl as the at-large bid.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. You know, especially like if, say, you know, South Carolina or Missouri wins the East and they already have two losses and Alabama annihilates them.
Mm-hmm.
And Auburn played Alabama really close. Then you could see, you know, a 10-2 Auburn team get potentially being attractive at the Sugar Bowl.
Sure.
So I think that's a possible. I wouldn't bet a lot of money on that. I think if Texas A&M is 10-2 and they're ranked close to Auburn, it's possible that, you know, I think it's likely the Sugar Bowl would pick them.
Yeah.
The other thing is traditionally the SEC's worked it out where the SEC West winner team, the winner, not the winner, these the second best team in the West often goes to the Cotton Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a real scenario where Auburn could go to the Cotton Bowl, and it'd be fun. I mean, I'd love to see Auburn go to the Cotton Bowl and play Oklahoma or Texas Tech or somebody like that.
I'd rather play Oklahoma, not because they're better, but just because we haven't played Oklahoma in the modern era, as far as I can remember. And it would be a fun headlining matchup. Texas Tech is, I mean, they're a more fun team to watch, but they don't have the same panache to say, no, ooh, you played Oklahoma or you played Texas Tech. You know.
What about Texas?
Oh, I'd love to beat the living snot out of Texas any day, any time, any week. We have a nice little series with Texas over the last couple of decades, you know, or more, I guess. We played Texas in 83, 84, and 87, and 91. And we are 2-2 in that series.
Mm-hmm. And I think our coaching staff against their coaching staff would be a big advantage for us. And they've had games this year where they've given up a lot of rushing yards. I think we could chew them up. I think that's the kind of team you want because they're a name brand team. But I think we're better than them.
Yeah, we'd own the state of Texas.
Yeah,
there you go.
That would be a fun matchup.
So the Cotton Bowl. I'm never that excited about the Cotton Bowl. But what, isn't there some kind of a bowl that involves Dallas though? It's the SEC Big 12. That, does that come into play at all? I can't even remember what that's all about now.
No, you.
The Champions Bowl or something?
No, I think that goes into effect next year.
That's the one where if you win the SEC and win the Big 12 and neither team gets in the BCS 10, gets in the playoff.
In the playoff, right. In the 4-team playoff, you go to that game.
Right, which is never going to happen, so it doesn't
matter. But, I mean, this is a year from now, this could be a scenario for Auburn. They could be in that bowl game. Not this year.
Right.
All right. I think that was pretty realistic.
Yeah, I do too. Who would we I was looking at this. This is the last thing I want to say about it because I actually looked into this. I was looking at who we would play if we went to the Sugar Bowl. Best, you know, probably best case scenario unless something insane happens, right? Central Florida or Miami right now?
It's not going to be Miami because Florida State is going to crush them on Saturday.
Yeah, but that'd be their only one loss, though.
Well, they still got to play Virginia Tech, and then they have to play whoever wins that division between Miami and Virginia Tech has to play the winner of the other
Florida
division
State
again.
Yeah.
So they could get crushed by Florida State twice in a month. So yeah. I don't think it's going to be Miami. I think Central Florida, you know, and they win that dang conference and
conference American made whatever.
Yeah, the former Big East. Nobody wants to see Central Florida in a game, but. They're not bad. I mean, they hung with South Carolina for a while, so.
Well, last night I was mentioning this on Twitter, and, like, Central Florida Nation came out of the Twitterverse to jump on me. I wasn't even saying anything negative so much as just, you know, gosh, I sure don't want to play Clemson again, and I don't want to play Central Florida because the name brand is recognition is not what it ought to be. And I said, I guess and that just leaves Miami potentially, and I'd rather play them just because of who they are. And, oh, the Central Florida people, it's like I insulted their mothers.
You did.
Well,
it's harsh.
I told them I enjoyed our series back in the 90s when we beat them 4 out of 4, and then the next year they beat Alabama, so that was good.
They did their job.
Yes, they did. All right, what's left? Around the SEC last week?
That's right. And we got to start with that great Missouri-South Carolina game.
Gosh, no. God, I was just, oh, my. I was just hating life, man. I mean, even Spurrier was kind of humble for once.
Because that was a freaking miracle they pulled that game out, and he knows it.
He knows it. I know. I mean, he was just like, whip. He wasn't as usually kind of flip smart alecky self. He was sort of introspective and reflective, which is very odd for Spurrier. I thought it was very interesting. But how did you feel about that? I mean, Missouri, good Lord.
It was going on the same time as the Auburn game. So we had seen some of the beginning of it when Missouri jumped up to a big lead. And then the Auburn game was winding down and, you know, we were running at the clock basically with Jonathan Wallace. So we went in and watched the end. And, you know, Missouri was up 17-0.
In the fourth quarter.
And South Carolina puts in the Connor Shaw, who is their real starting quarterback, but had been hurt. So he hadn't played this week. And he asked to come in the game, and he was healthy enough, so they cleared him and put him in. And he leads South Carolina right down the field. They score a couple, three times. They tie the game up. They go to double overtime. In the second overtime, you know, Missouri, this running back comes around the end, and you think he's going to score, but he gets tripped up about the 8-yard line. They end up kicking a field goal. Well, South Carolina kicks the field goal first. Missouri winds up to kick the field goal going second in the second overtime, and it doinks off the cross, you know, the goalpost.
Oh, and even before that, in the first overtime, Missouri scored a touchdown.
Yep.
And South Carolina was at fourth and goal at like the 15.
That's right.
And they hit the touchdown.
That's right. So it was, you know, one miracle play after another for South Carolina in the fourth quarter. I mean, and Connor Shaw was amazing. He was great in the fourth quarter. But I genuinely felt bad for Missouri. I mean, they had that game. They had it, and they let him get away.
Mm-hmm. There was everything but an earthquake.
There was. It was, you know, especially at home in Missouri, I felt bad for them. So, but and now it's a situation where, you know, Missouri still has to play Texas A&M. They still got Ole Miss on the road.
That's not a given.
They play Tennessee this week. That's not a given either, especially if they had come out with a big hangover from this loss.
Oh, and it could beat them twice.
It could. It could. This is the kind of game that's so crushing, they could come out flat and Tennessee could beat them.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt bad for Missouri, but, I mean, South Carolina, you know.
Yeah, what can you do? So now the East is kind of still in Missouri's hands, but it just is a lot more slippery grip than we would have thought a week ago.
Sure. I mean, that now, you know, like the Georgia-Florida game matters a little bit.
As somebody said, it's not really the world's greatest outdoor cocktail party, but it is kind of outdoor, I guess, still. And I added, and probably a lot of cocktails. Now, we're going to talk about that in a minute because I got a question to ask you about that. But
there's plenty of cocktails here. So that was other than that this week, not a whole lot going on in SEC. A&M crushed Vandy. Alabama crushed Tennessee.
Well, I want to ask you that now. Texas A&M, they sure did get over their their loss to us and get things turned around. They just came out and just, you know, blank slapped Vanderbilt in the first quarter.
Well, I think that, you know, they didn't want to have Vanderbilt hang around and get their hopes up or whatever. I mean, if Vanderbilt doesn't have the offensive firepower to hang with them, I think that's the other part of this.
Well,
so.
It was so funny because I watched the first few minutes and it was like 21-0 A&M. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I changed the channel. And then I flip back over, and it's like 21-17. And I'm like, I'm like, oh, okay. And then somebody called me away for, I swear, 45 seconds. And I come back, and it's like 48-17. And I'm like, yep, so much for that game.
There you go. And the Alabama-Tennessee.
Yeah, that was another butt-whooping from the – that looked like Auburn-Florida Atlantic.
It did. And here's the thing I've seen with Tennessee is they play much better at home.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something – don't think we're going to get that Tennessee team. They look the same way when they played at Florida. Their offense looked like they had no idea what they were doing, and the quarterback looked terrible. When they play at home, they play much more confidently. So, and then the Mississippi State-Kentucky game was Thursday night. That was a close, competitive game between two not very great teams.
How hot is the seat under Dan Mullen? Or bearing in mind this is Mississippi State we're talking about.
I mean, you know, they should have lost that game.
Yeah.
I mean, if, you know.
Are they, what, 4-4 now, or 3-5, or what are? What, I mean, they're not having a great year.
No.
I just feel like, you know, Mullen has been living on his reputation from Florida and on that first season where they did really well. And every year since then, it's been kind of a half step back and a half step back and a half step back. And I just wonder how much longer the Mississippi fans are going to be patient, and who would they get? You know, I don't want to go into a dissertation on who Mississippi State's going to hire next, but
I think they'll give them a little bit longer. Here, yeah. They're 4-3, and here's their next three games.
You ready? Same as Florida and Georgia. How about that?
Yeah, they're 4-3, and they got at South Carolina, at A&M, home for Alabama.
So 4-6.
Yeah, 4-6, and then they go to Arkansas.
Yeah, that's
all. And then they got Ole Miss at home.
5-6, 5-7. Ooh, no bowl game for Starkville.
Yep.
Wow.
So,
upcoming games.
All right, this week we got your aforementioned cocktail party.
The world's most mediocre cocktail party.
Florida's offense is just
less party, more cocktail.
Exactly. I'm going to say this, man. If you fans who've been forced to watch Florida's offense all year are going to drink, I know that, because their offense is just terrible. That guy came from BYU, and he thought, you know, they were exciting, and he was going to bring all the stuff. So I think some of it is just Muschamp wants the most vanilla, boring offense ever, and that's what they got.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
So, I mean, Georgia is still dealing with injuries. You're not sure, you know, who's going to be able to play, so... And then the other one is Tennessee at Missouri. We can see if there's a big hangover from that game. And then Mississippi State against South Carolina, which
I don't care. So, before I want to get back to the other one, but Tennessee, Missouri, we sort of touched on this, but it's at Missouri. They beat Tennessee and Columbia, don't they?
Oh, I think, I mean, unless they come out completely flat from the South Carolina loss and they screw around, I think they beat them by, 17 points.
Did I understand, because I turned it off, did I understand that the winner of the South Carolina-Missouri game got some kind of Columbia trophy?
I saw that. Look, this is the SEC, boys. This is not the
Big Ten where you get
Ten where there's some log or an axe or something dumb like that.
A milk jug.
The two mayors of Columbia bet some silver cup or something, and the team carried it off the field. They were kissing it or something. It was stupid. Come on.
I thought it should be a gold-plated map of the country of Colombia. So they could say, we claim all the Colombias are ours.
I saw that and I was like,
we're coming for you next, New York City. We want that Colombia too.
I don't know what... I mean, what are you going to have, like Vanderbilt, Kentucky, make some kind of dumb trophy and... worry about who wins it.
The also ran bowl. Yeah, there you go. Hot seats. You and I have debated this for about the last week or so, and I want to bring it out on the air here. I think that Mark Richt and Muschamp are both feeling a little warmth in their buttocks region. You think it's not so much. So let me hear your side of it. Let the listeners hear your side of this argument.
Well, first on the Rick thing, I talked to my younger brother today who was in Atlanta. He said he talks to a lot of Georgia people and that they're giving Rick a pass because of the injuries. They know everybody can see the injuries and they think, he's had so many injuries that nobody could win with that. And that if the team was fully healthy and they had the same record, I think they might have already fired him. But he's getting an excuse. Mm-hmm. I think, we'll see. The defense has been pretty bad. Maybe they'll put some pressure on the defense coordinator. But I think Rick is going to get a pass because they're just, maybe the running back comes back, Gurley and and they beat, Florida. Maybe they beat Auburn with him. So I think they could salvage their season. Florida, some of it is, like I said, their offense is just terribly designed. They've had a lot of injuries too. They lost their starting quarterback, one of their running backs, the best defensive tackle. Some of it is their offense is just set up to be boring and vanilla. And I think Muschamp's gonna get a lot of pressure to fire the offensive coordinator, bring in somebody else. But Muschamp himself, I mean, look, they were 10-2 last year. People thought, oh, gonna be better, and they're much worse. Mm-hmm. And they still have a lot of tough games left. So they got to play Florida State at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's not going to go well.
I don't think so. Yeah. So, although we've seen years where the ACC teams appeared better and the SEC teams snuck up and bit them, but
that's true.
You got to think Florida State's going to take it to them. So,
well, let me do Muschamp first. Muschamp, I just bear in mind he's got a very Ron Zook-ish record so far.
He does. It is almost exactly like Ron Zook's record.
Mm-hmm. And somebody was saying that Jeremy Foley, rumor is that Foley feels like he pulled the trigger on Zook too early, to which I reply, are you kidding? you brought in Urban Meyer and won two national championships. I would say you fired him right on schedule. But Georgia, though, is interesting to me just because – Georgia is a program that has been more reluctant to fire a coach than just about any other SEC program I can think of. Georgia hung on to Ray Goff for like 6 years, right? They
you say that like it's a bad thing.
Well, depending on whose perspective you're looking at, obviously, but right. I mean, Georgia has given Rick so much rope, right? So many, every time it's that. You know, Rick goes out there and basically has a 3-year cycle. He'll have 1 year where they compete to get to Atlanta. They'll have 1 year where they're kind of mediocre. And they have 1 year where they totally lay an egg.
Mm-hmm.
And they just go round and round on that. And they haven't really won anything of any consequence since 2005. I know they were one play away last year, but somebody pointed out they have the same or better talent than Alabama. How long can they sit there and look at Alabama doing what they're doing and not say, why isn't that us?
Mm-hmm.
But they never have.
I think some Georgia fans do.
Yeah.
They feel like he loses games every year that he shouldn't, but
he's kind of the Tuberville, the early 2000s Tuberville of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So, where you win games that are spectacular, and then you turn around and lose to Arkansas. How many times did we do that?
A lot.
We beat Florida, lose to Arkansas over and over and over.
So, yeah, I think that's – but I think, Rick is living off last year. And again, I think the injuries this year have given him, and to a lesser extent, Muschamp, an excuse to a pass. So they'll get to come back next year and do it again.
All right. Well – that pretty much gets us to the end of our show. Any last thoughts about the Auburn-Arkansas game or anything else?
No, I mean, you got to feel good about going up there against this Arkansas team. Much better than I did at the start of the season. I feel like we can go up there and run the ball on them. Marshall, as long as Marshall's healthy and plays. I mean, if Jeremy Johnson had to play the whole game, I might be a little bit nervous about turning the ball over and stuff. But Marshall goes up there and plays. We're going to run the ball on them and take control of that. And I think our defense can hold down their running game, and I think we'll be fine.
I'll put it this way. Before the season started, I had the confidence level on a scale of 1 to 10 for us winning this game. I had it between a 5 and a 6. Now I've got it at about an 8, notwithstanding the hex. If not for the hex, I'd probably have it at a 9.5.
Yeah.
Now, 6 to 8 doesn't sound like a lot, but in the SEC,
it's a lot.
It's a lot, right. So I feel like 4 out of 5 times we ought to win this game.
That's right.
So, and rather than flipping a coin.
That's right.
All right. All right. Well, be sure to pick up Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams in paperback or on Kindle. And they're at bookstores. You can order them anywhere on Amazon or on Kindle. John and I will be back next week to talk about fine barbecue products that can be had in Fayetteville, Arkansas. That's what I'm planning on eating, certainly on Saturday.
Absolutely.
I just got to decide which place to go. Probably 17th Street. Best barbecue in Illinois, I think, 17th Street barbecue in Murfreesboro. So, all right.
Illinois barbecue.
Oh, you say that just like I would have before I moved here, but 17th Street Barbecue on the Food Network all the time. They've got 3 World Championships Memphis in May is spectacular. You got to come visit sometime, and I'll take you out.
All right.
Our time is up. As always, we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Watch those flashbacks, dude.